afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, the original Lifestyle CEO, and you have arrived at the one place on your internet dial where we empower you to break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. Today is Monday, October 16th. And, of course, I won't struggle with that date. It's my son's third birthday, so we've already had two parties this morning. And we're going to have another one after the show today. And I'm just really excited to be here. You know, I'm also excited because I read in the paper over the weekend that someone that I have respected and read about for a long time is the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, one of them. He is Muhammad Yunus, the founder of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. And what this guy does is he provides microloans to small businesses. And people in India, of course, just where the economy is so bad and there are so many people who are struggling to make ends meet by making things with their hands, as many of us as small business owners do, it's wonderful to see Muhammad Yunus and the Grameen Bank get this kind of recognition. So congratulations to him and all the business owners in India, our brothers and sisters in arms, that he's helping to become successful and support their families. Today on the show, I'm very excited to introduce Linda Feinholtz. She is the owner of Feinholtz & Associates Business by Design. So if you're interested in designing your business your way, this is the lady to talk to. She offers management, consulting and coaching services, and she founded her business after several years with the Walt Disney Imagineering Company, where she was in charge of strategic planning, operations planning, and business analysis. Today at Feinholtz & Associates, she is a member of the Institute of Management Consultants and the Professional Coaches and Mentors Association, and she helps businesses just like yours to help find their niche and create the kind of atmosphere that can propel them forward into the future. Linda Feinholtz, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much.
I'm really excited to have you. Had you read about the Grameen Bank before this announcement about the Nobel Peace Prize?
I have, actually. Over the years, I recall when he first started this idea and it sent ripples through the world, you know, this concept that you could be materially helping the small business person make an enormous difference in their life, their success, and by extension, in their family, in their community. It was really quite marvelous when he launched it, and it's been fabulous to watch over the years as it's succeeded. And it, in fact, has become a model that is often discussed in business schools, folks in MBA programs who think that, you know, their future in life is to go off and do investment banking and very big dollar ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this concept and its success has really helped reshape how people look at the world and the possibilities in it.
Yeah, it's just amazing. I first heard about it several years ago as well, and it was fascinating how this man had this idea, which was obviously driven by a passion that he had for poor people in India, but also, you know, by his values, which were contrary to, you know, the traditional banking industry. And I've heard it said that when he first went and tried to get some funding for his business based on the business model that we've described, all the bankers just kind of laughed at him.
Yep.
So he just went off and said, okay, well, if I can't get any money, you know, how many pennies do you need to manufacture a chair? And I'll give you enough to make three or four. And these people would go and they would make the chairs and they would sell them and they would pay him back at a rate that far exceeded what traditional business people would pay back, you know, in the traditional lending market.
Yes. And when you were speaking a moment ago about personal values, and I think what's really important to understand is what he was also doing was validating the personal values of each one of those people who was getting that loan, that they understood that they had something to contribute in the world, mm-hmm. and that there was value in that, and there was someone who was going to support them becoming successful at doing that. And I think that's just a marvelous message that he sent over and over and had tremendous ripple effect through their communities.
Yeah, and also obviously throughout the world as he wins this prize and encourages all of us to do our best to, of course, be successful in business, but also to help other people.
Indeed.
And, you know, Linda, of course, that's where you come in. I like to have people on my show who have a passion for helping other people, but also who by their own example have gone from, you know, kind of a traditional work environment to creating their own kind of niche. Of course, I call it, you know, breaking the rules, building your own corporate ladder, and creating the life you love. So tell us a little bit, Linda, about how you came to start Feinholz & Associates.
Well, I have a rather unusual background. I grew up partially in California and partially in Geneva, Switzerland. And the advantage of that upbringing was that I found myself overseas in a culture. I had classmates from 114 countries. And at a very early age, the message was brought home to me that there were different ways of looking at the world, different ways of looking at situations. And, of course, you know, in my childhood, I didn't think that that's what I was learning. I was just playing with my friends and so on. But when I went, you know, in high school and started working and doing work during Christmas and summers and part-time work, one of the things that happened is I was always noticing there were other ways to approach doing things. I might learn how a manager showed me they wanted something done, but I was pretty rapidly noticing there were other easier, faster, more efficient, more effective ways of getting things done. And as I then finished my college degree and entered the workforce, I was the same talent was always showing up, and I was always trying to get wherever I was more effective, more efficient. As I had management jobs and I was working with my own teams of folks, that same attitude was coming through over and over. And so, in a sense, management consulting found me, because in traditional business, most people in management are hired to maintain the status quo. And I was never wanting to maintain the status quo. I was always automatically looking for how to break the status quo, even with the smallest of changes, how the slightest change in an idea, a skill, a talent, a technique could literally change how effective or how efficient or how productive or how profitable some process, some company was. And I just really became aware that my passion wasn't about the actual company I was in, but rather using those ideas and those processes to help other people who had a passion for their job, their company, their idea in the world. And so the two came together. I went off and got a master's in business so that I'd have the vocabulary to use, mm-hmm. and that became the beginning of my consulting career.
So you left your job and then got your business degree and then started your business? Is that how the...
The chain had a couple of extra steps in there. I left my job and went back full-time to get a master's in business. At that point, I knew I was not someone who could work a full-time day job and go take full-time classes at night. Mm-hmm. So I regretfully said goodbye to UCLA Medical Center, where at the time I was a manager and I'd been turning around operations in various departments in their outpatient clinic system. And I went and got my MBA full-time, made mm-hmm. that investment in myself so that I could keep my focus. Mm-hmm. And from there, I went to the Avon company, known worldwide for cosmetics and other health and beauty products. And I did strategic planning, but I was there in a very unique era when the corporate goal was to decentralize strategic planning from headquarters. And so for 2 years, I worked with the general managers of their then 8 Pacific Rim markets in 2 ways. First, I created the first strategic plan because I had the know-how in order to accomplish it. But from the moment that plan was completed, I was then consulting to those general managers who were operations folks. They'd run operations for 20 or more years. And I was teaching them incrementally, one idea at a time, one question at a time, one next idea at a time, one next question at a time, one next technique at a time, how to become the strategic thinkers and strategic mm-hmm. planners for their own market. And so by the end of a year and a half, 2 years, they were the strategic thinker for their market. They were the strategic planner in addition to running their operations. And mm-hmm. so it was a very graceful way of getting them new skills and new techniques so that I was no longer the expert in their country, but they were more expert. They, in fact, their skills became, you know, they were raised to the next level, and so was their business overall.
Mm-hmm. And so when you started your business, you left that kind of environment, which is obviously, you know, far, you know, larger than at least most of the lifestyle CEOs that I work
Indeed.
With on a regular basis. How did you translate those skills into the kind of customer that you wanted to serve?
Well, what I found over time was I left Avon in order to go into consulting. And in those days, traditional consulting was, we're the experts, please leave your desk, we'll straighten things out and let you back. And I found out very rapidly that isn't how I wanted to work with people. I wanted to teach them how to become more expert. And the opportunity came to go and become an internal consultant at the Disney Company in Walt Disney Imagineering. And so what I had was I had a single environment with a very large set of small businesses. The folks in that company had small areas of focus that they were responsible for, and each of those areas worked with each other. But when I was working with a vice president or a director or a manager, I was working with them on their business, how they thought about their business, the skills they needed for leadership, for management, the skills their teams needed, the technology and resources that the individuals in their division or their departments needed. And so in a sense, it was a very rapid transition to working with small businesses. And over time, I realized that there were a lot of small businesses out there that had no access to the kinds of information that I had access to, that very large corporations were investing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to train people, but that the whole rest of the business world didn't even know the vocabulary, let alone that you could run a meeting more efficiently, that you could set a goal in a particular way, that you could communicate it to the other folks in your company so that on Tuesday morning, everyone knew why they're coming into the company and what their job was contributing towards creating as a success for that
company. And Linda, have you found that those principles and concepts that larger companies spend billions of dollars implementing are easily transferred to the small business owner?
Very, because one of the things that I did very naturally was I took very big, complex ideas and kept winnowing them down to very simple steps, very simple ideas.
Okay, so can you give us an example, Linda, of one of the things that you've seen in your practice small businesses struggling with that's pretty common, that you could say most small business owners struggle with this issue? And give us an example of one of those larger concepts that you've broken down into the smaller pieces.
Sure. So, for instance, a lot of us hear the language goal setting and delegation and so on. What I do when I'm working with small business owners is I will take the time to have them walk through step by step, becoming very clear what's their goal in life, what are they trying to accomplish, what's the style of life they want. Set that first. Then look at one basic question. What's the thing that you see needs doing in the world? It may be a way of helping people become more effective. It may be selling a particular kind of product that makes a technology work better for someone. It may be being a jeweler that has a vision for a kind of jewelry that just makes your heart soar when you look at it. And the next step after being clear about your vision is being able to work out what are the short list of steps that can make that happen in the world. So I'll take the jeweler, for instance. I worked with a small business owner. She was a jeweler. She did very unique kinds of really exquisite jewelry, and she was completely overworked and completely overwhelmed. And as we spoke about it, what became clear was the assumptions she was making about her business, which were that not only did she have to design each piece, she had to make each piece.
Okay.
What she came to understand was, no, she was operating from an assumption that was keeping her stuck and overwhelmed. But in fact, I worked with her on identifying jewelry stores in her local area that had staff who knew how to work with the kinds of materials she was creating and hire them to make duplicates once she had designed the prototype using exactly the techniques she wanted used. What that enabled her to do was instead step back and plan what was the entire line of jewelry going to look like, who were the stores she wanted to have represent her line, and go create the relationships with them, and be able to look back and say, these three people are duplicating the jewelry the way I want them to, so now I know who will be, quote, on staff, even if it's temporary staff, in order to make those when we get orders. It completely changed how she was using her time. It completely changed how she was using her attention. And it completely lowered her stress and anxiety about, oops, what happens if I get successful and I get an order for...
Now, what did you say she was manufacturing?
Jewelry.
Jewelry, okay. That's great. I have a couple of questions I want to follow up on with that when you come back. It's a great example, and all of my listeners can relate to it because many of them do manufacture products, you know, of their own by hand, oftentimes from scratch, at least as they start their businesses. So we're going to take a short break. I want to let you guys know if you have questions for Linda about designing your business your way, you can call us toll-free at 800-773-0355. We're looking forward to hearing you and your comments or questions. This is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we are here with Linda Feinholz of Feinholz & Associates Management Company. And Linda was sharing with us before the break an example of a company that she kind of, you know, led to the point where they could, you know, free themselves up, so to speak, to be more successful and helping them get into the habit of delegating things so they could chart their own course. And so, Linda, for this jewelry, you said this was a jewelry-making company. She was making everything herself at first.
Indeed.
And did this company, did she have, you know, a significant budget so she could just start hiring vendors or hiring people? How did she make that transition?
She, in fact, was operating with no budget. She was operating from passion. She loved making jewelry, and people were constantly saying, I want that. And she had her jewelry selling in a few stores in the Los Angeles area. She, in fact, had moved out of state, but when she would fly into town, she'd show up with her cases of jewelry. And there were two issues at hand. One was she had herself completely overwhelmed. She had herself overwhelmed with the assumption she had to do it all herself, and she had herself completely overwhelmed with how she had organized her work so that it was almost impossible to delegate. So
one of the main things you're saying is that we have assumptions, even before we start getting to the nuts and bolts. There are certain assumptions that we have that aren't even true.
Correct. And very often, you know, when I try and speak with people about assumptions in advance of an event, it's all theory, and they can't really grapple with it.
Mm.
So it's only when they're in the midst of being stuck that I'm able to help them unpeel the onion and get down to those assumptions. So here's one assumption. One of her assumptions, as we mentioned before the break, is that she had to do it all herself. Once she understood, the assumption was, I'm the only one with the skills who will do the jewelry the way I want it to look, and we could find the resource that she'd be able to direct someone who had the skill working with the elements of her jewelry, and it was a matter of finding someone who was committed to producing it the way she wanted, she could visualize actually handing something off to someone else and shifting from doing the work to overseeing how they were doing it. Complete change in her use of time.
Right. So how did she use her money to do that? What are some of the adjustments she had to make?
One of the things we did was we talked through what was the value of her time, an hour of her time, and what was the highest and best use of that time. And she became very clear that the highest and best use of her time was to be out selling. And if she got an order, then she'd have the money to pay the person at a lower hourly rate than using her time to manufacture, and she'd be able to deliver. So that was how the momentum was going to be started to be created, that she was going to focus on getting the orders, and by getting the order, she would know that she'd have the money to make that quantity. She'd have the money for the raw materials and to pay for the labor and for delivery of the product and so on.
Now, was that a scary thought for her to think of? I mean, I guess obviously first you have to make that determination, then you have to hire or engage the services of a contractor to help you, then you have to tell them they'll be paid, then you have to hope that you get a sale.
Well, the irony was she was not hiring anybody ahead of time. In this instance, she was identifying what was the skill set she would need. We were able to identify that there were resources around her who had those skill sets, and therefore she could start a relationship with them and find out, for instance, would they like to work part-time evenings or weekends to make extra money.
Mm-hmm.
So she did not have to ramp up and build an entire organization. What she had to do was build a relationship with the resources who mm-hmm. would help her move to her next level. She was
right.
not going to be producing $1 million worth of jewelry the next month. She was going to need to be able to produce a certain number of pieces, and
mm-hmm.
once she had the personal experience of working with staff, then she would know how many more hours she was going to need to buy of their time as each next order came in, and ramp up one step at a time to the next level.
And so how long ago did this kind of transition occur, and how are things going now?
I worked with her in the spring of last year. Within 6 weeks, she had identified the skills she wanted. I worked with her also on how she was displaying all of her jewelry to simplify when she opened her cases, how things were laid out, so that if she walked into one of these high-end jewelry stores to present what she had, it was very simple for the buyer to look at and understand what their choices were in the jewelry. So that changed the sell side. At the same time, by the 6 weeks, she had identified suppliers for her materials if she needed to start buying them in higher volume, and she had identified the resources she would be working with on this part-time basis. And by within about 9 months, she actually had three more high-end outlets who were representing her jewelry.
Wow. And
so, yeah, enormously successful.
So literally, it took 90 days approximately.
Correct.
For her to start seeing the tangible financial benefit.
Correct. And I want to talk about the tangible benefits on two fronts. One is the emotional benefit, because just as a result of our conversations, her shoulders relaxed, her breathing relaxed, the tension in the middle of the back of her neck relaxed, because she could see concrete steps, each one doable, that she herself was capable of doing that would get her the information she needed so she could make each next decision and move forward instead of feeling overwhelmed and stuck.
Right, like the credit card commercials. relaxed shoulders, priceless.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Not that I want to endorse credit card companies at all. But the point,
have,
I think, is well made.
Right, they have their purpose in time.
Right, right. Yeah. So that was one, and then obviously the other one, and maybe there are others, was financial.
Exactly.
But one was immediate. I mean, it sounds like having that relaxed attitude was one of the things she needed to kind of help her implement this change.
Yes, I find that folks who have made the decision that they want to pursue their own passion, start their own company,
mm-hmm.
for any of a variety of reasons, get
mm-hmm.
themselves into overwhelm because they're keeping in their brain 60 different questions. They don't
mm-hmm.
know how to quiet the chatter and get to what are the core issues that need to be solved and what are the simple steps to get them solved. And once they see that, part of my work in my coaching programs, in the masterminds that I run, and in the articles and tips and techniques that I put out, are how to get at the basic question,
mm-hmm.
and what are the one or two steps to take with regard to that issue?
You know, it is so easy. I'm sitting here, of course, as a small business owner, and I work with small business owners, too. Isn't it easy for us to do that when we're operating on someone else?
Very often.
Get right to the core of somebody else's issue.
And this is the power of masterminds, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar with this idea of the mastermind, which is finding groups, smallish groups, large groups of like-minded people dealing with similar challenges, not necessarily identical, so that you can bring your issue to the table and get a variety of different perspectives fed back to you for your benefit, for, you know, other people who know that this environment exists in order for people to share their ideas and build each other's success along the way.
And Linda, do you have mastermind groups?
I do.
I want to talk about those in a second, but I wanted to follow up on what you were saying, too, about the jewelry entrepreneur that you were talking about. It's just kind of a follow-on question. Have you also worked, Linda, with businesses who have, you know, many of the pieces in place, but who, for whatever reason, you know, it's just time to kind of maybe go in a different direction? Have you experienced that? And what I work with a lot of people, or you maybe get this question too. It's like, you know, I've tried everything. Maybe this isn't for me. What goes into that decision, and how can you help people work through that?
Well, in a sense, it's the same process. It all starts with questions. And the questions are, what are the assumptions you've made to date that have created the company that, or the business or the approach you're taking right now? And very often, we're all so busy, we don't ask ourselves that question. We don't create the quiet space. So being in conversation with another person who poses that question to you enables people to say, I'm assuming, and fill in the blank. So very often, people who are stuck have a series of assumptions they've made that got them to the place they're in now, and they're so invested in the result they've created that it takes an outside question like, have you talked to your customers? What is it they like best? What is it they'd like differently?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Your assignment for this week is find 10 customers to talk to.
Right.
And
sounds so easy.
It sounds so easy. As we all know, what often gets us in motion is being coached by another person, being in a mastermind group where you've made small commitments for accountability with an accountability partner that, as a result of that conversation, as a result of that agreement, you'll go take an action that you wouldn't stimulate yourself to go take.
I want to hear more about that. We have a few more minutes. I want to hear more about your mastermind groups. How can people sign up? Can we go to your website and sign up for this and learn more?
The website itself is actually in design right now. I'm completely relaunching the website. So in another 6 weeks, the website will be up as yoursuccesscatalyst.com.
Yoursuccesscatalyst.com. Will Feinholz.com point there?
It will point there.
Okay, so for now, people can go to your, the spelling of your last name, which is Feinholz.com.
Perfect.
Okay.
And additionally, in the next few weeks, I'm going to be launching a new newsletter. It's a free newsletter that's going to have weekly articles and tips and techniques that people can read, think about how they'd apply it, and use it that day, use it that week, and get immediate changes and results and you know, use those tools, whether it's in their business life and the rest of life and so on. So if they would like further information right now about the mastermind groups, if they'd like to be put on the mailing list for the free newsletter, all they need to do is send me an email at linda@feinholz.com, and that's spelled very simply, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at Feinholz, Feinholz.com, and send me that email, and what I will do is I will be putting you on my list to notify you as each of those launch. You'll be able to go and get the information directly in that format. Prior to that, I'll be sending people information using emails, but once the site is up, they'll be able to access that information themselves.
Okay. And you guys know I stay in touch with my guests, so if for any reason you can't contact Linda, all you need to do is email me at dm@lifestyleceo.com or go to lifestyleceo.com and click on the radio show, and you can easily find find Linda. And if you can't find her easily, you just call me or email me, and I'll help you find her lickety-split. So, Linda, you have got a really great – it sounds like you have put together a kind of program that could help people. And so I want to make sure that we let people know that they can, you know, call in any questions they have. So I'm going to give everyone – the call-in number one more time because we have one more segment. It's 800-773-0355. And when we come back, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Linda, I want to talk with you about the issue that I hear so much about. And in fact, it sort of makes me, well, I won't say how it makes me feel. We'll just, I don't want to slant the conversation. But, you know, the issue of balance. Mm-hmm. The issue of, and I really call it something else, but we can talk about that later. But when you work with your customers and your clients, I would imagine that that has got to be, particularly if they're women, and particularly if they also have families, that's got to be a huge issue. And so I would imagine that you have, you know, come across and developed some successful tips and techniques to help people successfully integrate all these facets of their lives, one of which is their business.
Indeed, and I look forward to speaking with all of you about it.
Okay, good. Well, this is the Lifestyle CEO Show. We're talking to Linda Feinholz of Feinholz Consulting, and we will be right back with more.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the Lifestyle CEO Show. I'm here today with Linda Feinholz of Feinholz & Associates, Business by Design. And Linda's been sharing with us some of her really valuable tips for helping people to kind of overcome some of the assumptions that have been holding them back and taking their business to the place where they really, really want it to be. And before we went on our break, Linda, we were talking a little bit about you know, how the masterminds works and things like that. Could you share some more information about how you're putting that program together and why it would be worth someone's, you know, time to get together with other people in that context?
Oh, certainly. The purpose of a mastermind is for individuals to find a way to create a brain trust, their own board of directors, where people become familiar with the goals that each of them is setting for their life, for their business, and to be able to bring issues and ideas to the table in order to get more ideas, more information, to have their assumptions challenged, to become familiar with approaches that other people have tried and that have succeeded. And so the masterminds that I'm pulling together are going to consist of two elements. One is live conversation with myself and the team as a whole, where we'll go step by step through different tools and different techniques that help people focus their time and attention, improve their decision-making skills, improve their management and leadership and team skills, as well as a host of topics that really get at the root of why they're passionate about what it is they're trying to accomplish and how they can keep living that passion as they're also in charge of organizing and executing a business. So there will be live conversation. There will also be a forum where these folks can all be in touch with each other regularly. So while the live forum will be on a specific day of the week, specific time of day, those calls will be recorded so that people can download them and listen to them in the future. A word-for-word transcript will also be available because people like absorbing information in different ways. And they'll also have ongoing access through email and through a forum to to be in touch with each other to keep running ideas past each other, to schedule their own accountability partnerships with each other, and so on, in order to really create that board of directors that helps you examine ideas you have before you implement them or find solutions to things that are going on at the time.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like people get sort of cross-pollinization from doing something like that.
Tremendously. That's a great image. I love that. I'm going to keep using that.
Okay. Well, and it occurred to me because, I mean, do you find that people, even though they may be totally involved in totally unrelated and different kind of business ventures, that many of the same kinds of principles apply across the board?
That is exactly the issue. And very early in my consulting career, this notion of privacy and confidentiality was really drilled into me. So, you know, if you worked with one kind of law firm, you weren't going to work with another kind of law firm, so as to not be providing information that you'd just given to one client that they'd paid you for to another. And I bring this up because the joy of a mastermind is you have people from many industries, and in fact, rather than a myopic way of only seeing the world through one kind of lens, you get to see the world through a very diverse set of lenses and experiences, and you get a really enriched database of past solutions, past ideas, past techniques that have worked for others, so that you can really have a tool set of ideas to draw from rather than thinking, yet again, there's only one best way. I found there's seldom only one way to do something, that mm-hmm. your own personality, the culture of your company, your business, the more ideas that you have, the more you can customize the solution. The fundamentals are the same, but how you craft it, how you live it, can be quite varied.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting what you said about, you know, so many things just being, you know, being the same, just kind of a different kind of spin on it, depending on the business, maybe depending on the part of the country that you're in. And sharing this kind of information, particularly with other women, I mean, I find, and I wonder if you do too, that we really just seem to just ultra thrive when it comes to sharing information and helping each other to move ourselves forward toward our various goals.
Very much so. I often find when I'm working with women that they make progress very rapidly because we're all so used to talking and sharing ideas anyways. We're open to the notion that the next person we're speaking with could provide us with an idea that will help us solve something or move forward. And so the gift is that my goal is to provide the environment where they can get access to more and more information at the speed they want so they can adopt it at the speed that they want in the same sense.
Oh, okay. Okay. So tell me, Linda, in your experience, I'm interested to find out, I've been thinking, you know, as I was preparing for everything over the weekend, you know, about asking you a whole bunch of questions, and we've covered a lot of them, but do you find that, you know, in this day and age, it is, you know, looking at the economy and the way things are going today, that it is important for non-traditional reasons for people, women in particular, to own their own business?
I think it can be critical. I think that the economy and the business world has changed tremendously in the last 10 years, and we all like to speak about the 1960s when you knew that if you got a job, you'd be working with that employer for life, and I think the reality is nobody makes that assumption any longer. We all know that the workplace can be very flexible, that business circumstances for our employer can mean that for business reasons we might be laid off. And if someone has a passion and they have an interest, that idea can actually be a gift in the world. If you find a marketplace for that idea and build a relationship with your customers, you instead are building loyalty relationships with folks that can create much more security going forward. The art is having built that business is how will you stay flexible over time so that as the external environment changes, as the economy changes, as culture changes, as technology changes, how do you keep looking up from the desktop to look around and see what those changes are and what they might mean for your customers, for your clients, for your business, and how you might provide it, to keep refreshing the conversations with your customers to find out how they'd like to be communicated with, how they'd like to purchase, how they'd like problems to be solved, and so on, so that your business stays vital and can keep growing.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you talked about relationships. In my newsletter today, I interviewed a couple that owns a candle-making business, and they produce really fabulous soy candles that just smell out of this world. And it's interesting because, of course, we all know we can get candles on every street corner nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that they shared with me was a book that they're reading, and maybe you've heard of this. I had not heard of it before they mentioned it, but I may have to go grab it. It's called The Experience Economy, Work is Theater and Every Business is a Stage.
I love it.
I mean, you can just kind of tell what it's like. Have you found that people who, you know, implement that kind of strategy and make sure that they sort of see their business as not just, you know, selling widgets, but also developing an experience for their customer, that they tend to be the most successful?
Well, they're most successful for several reasons. One is they're closer to their customer, so they're getting immediate feedback about what's wanted and what's interesting and what's appreciated and what's valued. And at the same time, they're creating an environment that's fun for themselves. There's a vitality and an energy for themselves and anyone who's working inside the company. Day-to-day isn't rote and routine all the time. It doesn't mean that there aren't certain functions that don't need to be very routine and managed very well, but it also stirs up an energy that is all about the heart and the soul of everybody in the company. You create an environment where you want new ideas, you want innovation, and you're encouraging people to come forward with those ideas. They may come from your customers. They may come from other customers, namely the people who are inside your company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironically, the more flexible you stay, the more stable you are for the long term. I mentioned earlier that I grew up in Geneva, Switzerland, and I learned to ski in Switzerland. And the ski instructors used to ski down the slope behind us and then come next to us. And they would tap you on the back of your knees, saying, loose knees, loose knees. The technique in Europe was ski with very loose knees, because then it doesn't matter which little mogul or little gully you hit, you'll be able to recover your balance very rapidly and keep skiing. And when I came back to the United States, I found nobody here was being taught that particular technique. And it's an image that has stayed with me, and I use it all the time with the folks I work with. How can you develop loose knees inside your business, your profession, so that you can recover when the unexpected happens, the unexpected good and the unexpected not so good?
Loose knees. That's really interesting. And of course, you know, a lot of people, I guess, would think of weak knees when you say that, but you're saying that if you keep your knees loose, you can implement the flexibility and the fluidity that you need to meet a changing marketplace.
Precisely.
Huh. Loose knees. That's like, you know, I don't know, somebody have looseknees.com. You can build a whole brand around that, although I can imagine people would probably butcher it in other ways.
Exactly. I think I'll leave that for some other profession.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love how you, you know, have brought these hugely complex concepts and synthesized them for small business owners. I mean, the service that you're providing, it just can't be overstated how important it is, particularly as you said, that you feel that it is, I think your term was essential or vital, that people have something of their own.
Yes. You and I spoke a little bit earlier about this notion of what is a balanced life.
Mm-hmm.
And I will forever be grateful to one of the mentors I had years ago who posed the question of, you know, so what does a balanced life look like? And my own first assumption came out on the table, well, you know, 10% of it should be education and 30% of it should be work and 2% of it should be problem solving, and, you know, exercise should be 15% a week and so on. And I found myself, you know, I heard myself. I was living with this notion of I should be able to calendar the shoulds. I should be able to calendar all those things, and then I know I have a balanced life. And this mentor said to me, On the contrary, a balanced life is knowing in any given point in time what feels like the right balance, so that if you're stressed, you can pause and say, if there are 8 components to my life, family, personal time, education, spirit, and so on, people can create for themselves what are those particular characteristics that make a full life feel good and full and balanced for them. Then when you feel out of balance, you feel pressured, you can look at that and say, what's out of balance right now? Is it that right now I'm craving more spirituality?
Mm-hmm.
It is not about having this circle of ideas, everybody, each of these components should be at the same level. It's right now, which element feels out of balance, and how do I get that element differently in balance for me for right now? And that's always been very, very helpful to me. What I have found personally is I go through cycles. There's times where my spiritual side is longing and hungry. Now I know to go to a conference, to go get a book, to particularly listen to a program that's focused on spiritual matters. At other times, it's intellectual. I've been doing, and my mind would like something intellectual to chew on. Again, is that going to be found over a really good dinner conversation? Is that going to be found going to a class? Is it going to be reading the business section of the newspaper? I can sort that out because I can name what feels out of balance. Do I have enough family time? If not, how can time be reorganized so that a particular component is getting more attention and so on?
It is enormously important that you mention that, and here we are almost out of time. But I really appreciate that you said that because our society is so full of people who want people to tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're describing is the benefit of sitting back and looking at your life and deciding what you need to do. And maybe getting some help, I guess, from someone who can help you do it.
Yeah.
But not looking necessarily to somebody to just look at your life and tell you what to do.
Correct. And it's why I'm particularly devoted to helping people design what is the life they want, not what some particular guru says life should look like, or a particular business book says life should look like, or a particular newspaper article says women should be doing now, and so on. It's what is the balance you want? What's the idea you want? What's your passion that you want to have be created in the world? And now how can we deliberately, step by step, design that?
Wow. Well, that's very profound. You're talking about empowerment. And you guys listening out there, if you want some more of this, this is good stuff. If you want some more of this, I'm going to tell you where you go. You go to feinholz.com, Linda's website, www.feinholz.com. Linda, thank you so much for joining me on the Lifestyle CEO Show today.
Oh, Donna Marie, it's been a tremendous pleasure.
Yes, great, really, really great to have you. I want you guys to know what's coming up on the Lifestyle CEO Show. I've got a string of plans for you guys throughout the fall. Next week, Monday, October 23rd, Kim Gordon of smallbusinessnow.com will be here to talk about managing your home-based business. She's the author of several books on the topic. She's also a columnist for Entrepreneur Magazine. She's going to be joining me on the 23rd. On October 30th, the Business Buddha is going to be here to talk about implementing some of her trademark principles to help your business grow. And then we've got some great guests coming up in the fall. We're going to be starting Money Mondays on November the 6th with our guest, Mary Claire Alvine, who's an author of Financial Management Planning Books for Women. Money Mondays are coming up, you guys. We've got a business here. We've got to manage the money. So excited to have you guys join me. Join me next week for Kim Gordon of smallbusinessnow.com. In the meantime, get out there and break all the rules, build your own corporate ladder, and create the life you love. Have a great week, guys.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.